All right, we're preparing. We are live on Facebook. Hello, friends. It is Friday, which means it's Margaritas with Margarita. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, creator of the Incandescent Group and Incandescent TV. I'm thrilled to be here to introduce you to the wonderful executive director of the Asian Pacific Islander Domestic Violence Resource Project, DVRP. And Rita is a new board member. So I'm going to throw it right over to you to take it away.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Hello, Kritika. Thank you so much for being here with us. This is very special because it is AAPI Heritage Month. We are so excited for you to be here with us. So tell us about DVRP.
Sure. Hi, everyone. Happy Friday, TGIF. I am here with my ice cold water, no margarita. I will have the drinks after we're done. Thank you for inviting me to this wonderful space and podcast. And I'll tell you a little bit about DVRP. And of course, first of all, Margarita, thank you for being such a great supporter. Margarita is one of our new board members. So DVRP is the Asian Pacific Islander Domestic Violence Resource Project. And we were started about 25 years ago by a group of AAPI women in the Greater Washington area who looked around to see what supports and services there were for AAPI survivors of domestic violence and gender-based violence. And they found that there was very minimal to none at that point. And so they created DVRP. And we celebrated our 25th anniversary last year. And I'd say celebrated loosely since we were in the pandemic. We just recognized that it occurred, but we hope to have some sort of celebration moving forward. DVRP's work, as you know, is to respond to and to end gender-based violence. It is created in a way that ensures that survivors have access to culturally specific services and services in their language by folks who are also from their own communities. And like I mentioned, we were formed to mitigate multiple cultural and linguistic barriers facing those within the AAPI communities who identify as survivors. The way that DVRP works is all of our services are free of cost, first of all, and we have a survivor services hotline and a program where clients and community members can call in and get support if they're looking for support for a friend, a family member, or themselves. We have four case managers who are from four different parts of our communities. We have Kaylee, who is our case manager, who supports the Vietnamese community. We have Ellie, who supports the Chinese community. We have Yumi, who supports the Japanese community. And we have Aisha, who supports the South Asian community. And these are all trained case managers who use a trauma-informed, survivor-centric methodology to respond to the needs of survivors. What that means is that if somebody calls in, we are not telling them, oh, you should do these five things and your life will be better and okay, and you need to leave right now, because that's not being survivor-centric. We ask the survivor what situation they're in, give them options, and then it really depends on the person themselves what they want to do. And as we know, it sometimes takes survivors about up to seven times before they can finally leave an abusive partner. And sometimes leaving can be one of the most harmful time period in a survivor's life, because the most femicides and in terms of violence against women have occurred when a survivor is trying to leave their abusive partner. So we work very closely with survivors to provide them with options, with referrals and services. So providing them information on legal referrals, on mental health supports, providing them access to safe space to live in. Many survivors, especially during the pandemic, that's been one of the main needs when you're shut down in an apartment or a enclosed space with your abusive partner and have no way out. That has been exacerbated during the pandemic. And we have been working with survivors to find safe spaces for them. And during the pandemic, we've also been helping survivors access things like food and groceries, which have really been challenging to many, especially in our communities, when they have left their homes to get culturally specific food. You know, many times in shelters, we don't have access to things, simple things like rice, you know, which is a universal food item in all Asian cultures for the most part, you know. So the survivors and SSP program is one of our programs. And then we have our outreach and training program, which does a lot of work in terms of educating our communities and also folks who are doing gender-based violence around, you know, challenging and changing beliefs and perceptions around gender roles and norms, you know, how to be an effective bystander, and also creating some innovative programming and materials, such as right now we're working on a graphic novel multilingual graphic novel with stories around sexual violence, so that these conversations can happen organically and not just in a you know, classroom type setting where we're doing workshops and trainings consistently. We have also created a program using a peer education methodology, which was by using a grant from Time's Up Defense Fund, where we trained survivors and community members from our communities to be trained in how to respond to and talk about workplace sexual harassment in their communities. So that took away the onus from us doing the work to the community members themselves being leaders and leading that work. During the pandemic, and also more recently in the aftermath and continued violence against API women in particular, we've been hosting a series of workshops, healing spaces workshops for community members using methodologies such as yoga or mindfulness and other therapies, and a space where folks can come and share. And finally, the other final program that we have is technical assistance to mainstream agencies who are also serving API communities on how to serve our community members using a cultural humility lens. So to come into our community with humility rather than being like, okay, we know how to serve you, here's how we're gonna go. So using a framework that would actually respect our knowledge, our histories, and our cultures. So that's what DVRP does.
That is amazing. And I think what drew me to DVRP is how intentional you are. I love the cultural humility approach. I also love what you said about rice. What a lot of people don't realize is Asia is not just East Asians, it's South Asians, and Southeast Asians are very culturally diverse, religion, language, but we all eat our rice. Yeah. So with that in mind, I know you have extensive experience in the nonprofit sector with a specialization and focus on violence against women. I know that when I first met you, you're like, gosh, I wish we didn't have to do this work, but then I'd be out of a job, and we don't want you to be out of a job because you're so good at what you do. What drew you to this kind of work?
That's a really good question, Margarita. So I actually grew up in India till I was 13 years old, and I moved to the US at that point. And while I was growing up, so I saw the deep impact of classism and casteism in my community and folks around me growing up in India. You know, there were folks around me, my age, young girls, who didn't have access to the same things that I did in terms of education, you know, in terms of having access to the very basic necessities of life. And I was very, at that age, I became really aware of my own privilege. And I thought to myself, you know, what can be done? It can't just be, you know, I didn't think it was right that there was power over another person, you know, and there was so much hierarchy in society. So you know, at the same time, I was also, at that young age of starting at age 9, I experienced street harassment and sexual harassment on a daily basis going to school in India. And my school was literally a 3-5 minute walk from my house. And at that age, I didn't really know what it meant, but I knew it was I felt icky about it. You know, that I, you know, at the age of 9, I hadn't really had those conversations around, you know, consent and what is harassment, but I knew this was wrong. And I didn't feel like when men were like, groups of men would ogle me on the street, I knew that was something that was wrong and I wanted it to stop. So after moving to the US, I was also keenly aware of and experienced racism. And, you know, I'd seen violence in my family, in my community, and also the impact of systemic forms of violence, such as homophobia, transphobia, racism, classism, and sexism on survivors of violence. So when I reached college, I studied sociology and women's studies, and I spent summers doing internships in India and Nicaragua to see how communities were organizing around gender-based violence on a grassroots level. And after college, I started doing work both on gender-based violence as well as around domestic workers' rights in my own community of the South Asian community in New York City, to ensure that workers were having access to safe working conditions. And what I found actually was this really interesting intersection of the fact that, you know, in the gender-based violence work, you had survivors who were coming from different classes. But when it came to the workers' rights work, a lot of the women that and the people who were being impacted were low-wage workers working for doctors, lawyers, very well-off people in our own communities, and were being underpaid or treated like really poorly. So, you know, I got an understanding of how violence has permeated even within our own communities. It's not just out there. So, you know, I just realized also doing this work how important it was to do this using a trauma-informed survivor-centric model and ensuring that the framework of anti-racism and anti-oppression is followed. Otherwise, it just becomes a form of hierarchical form of social service rather than social justice and social change. Because it's really easy to do this kind of work just being like, okay, I'm going to help you, let me help you, instead of like, how can we work together to bring about collective change? You know, so that's, I think, one of the things really drew me to DVRP and continues to be a part of how I do this work. One of the other things I'll mention is I have predominantly done gender-based violence my whole career, even when I wasn't doing it as my paid labor and work. I did it as a volunteer, but I also have worked on other intersectional issues such as post 9/11 hate crimes against South Asians and Muslims, as well as on public health, and all of them that has been in API and immigrant and refugee communities. So that has really provided me with a holistic overview of the needs of our community. Finally, I will say on a personal level, having been somebody who has been in a relationship that was, you know, not a healthy relationship, I am also aware of how this happens. You know, we know that we say that this can happen to anybody, but I'm an example of somebody who had been doing this work for a decade and yet experienced, you know, was in a relationship that was harmful and in a space where if I didn't have access to social supports, I would, you know, I don't know how I would have continued on, you know. So I'm aware of this in terms of doing this work, not just from some sort of academic perspective, but from a deep personal and community perspective.
I absolutely love what you said. It's not just about providing services to people. It's about social justice and change. And I think that is so, that's what really stands out in my mind with the work you're doing at DVRP. This is your life's work. So as we mentioned in the beginning, May is AAPI Heritage Month. And, you know, I have people in my community who are like, what? I don't know there are hate crimes. You mean there's hate crimes against Asians? What would you like our viewers and listeners to know about the intersection of gender-based and racist violence? In fact, I know the first day that I spoke to you, it happened the day before.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So, you know, I would say that since March 2020, at the beginning of the pandemic, there have been at this point over 6,000 reports of hate crimes targeting Asian Americans nationwide, and close to over 60% of those incidents have been against AAPI women. So this is a gendered form of racist violence. There's no way about it. This is also a result of white supremacy, colonialism, settler colonialism, imperialism, Islamophobia, xenophobia, capitalism, and the many intersecting systems of oppressions that continue to exploit and harm our communities. And this is also not a new phenomenon. I would say that anti-Asian violence didn't just start a month ago or a year ago. It has been embedded in this country, and in terms of not just the attitudes, but in the laws and in the bills that further stigmatize and otherize our communities by preventing Asians from obtaining citizenship, the internment of Japanese Americans in World War II, the widespread violence against Vietnamese and Korean comfort women during wars perpetrated by the US, and like I mentioned, the post 9/11 hate crimes against South Asians and Muslims, and most recently through the Muslim ban. And, you know, this is a continuation of that violence. So I think that, you know, and in terms of why is it gendered, I think there is, that's a really interesting question. It's because throughout history, API women have experienced misogyny and stereotypes of extremes. Either we're too docile or too aggressive, sexually repressed or sexually promiscuous. And these stereotypes lead to the commodification and abuse of our bodies and intimate partner relationships in our communities, workspaces, and other spaces that we inhabit. So I think, you know, there are these dangerous stereotypes about API women that really lead to either to hypersexualization of API women, and, you know, and the perception that we are available, you know, and that we are also not going to say anything, you know, and speak up, because as a community, we have a stereotype of just the model minority myth, you know, it's, you know, we're really good at what we do, but we won't raise our voices when things, you know, hit the roof kind of thing. So I think all of those combined has led to an influx of violence and crime violence against API women in particular. But I think that what we are also seeing at this point is more like more conversations in our community. Folks are not just taking it lying down. We have, you know, we have organizations that are running workshops on how to be a good effective bystander against API violence. And, you know, like people are speaking up against, you know, the Atlanta attacks and other forms of violence that our community members have been experiencing. So there's change happening slowly, but I think that there needs to be wider conversations on this, and not just when something major happens, but a recognition of this as a historic issue.
Thank you for that. And I think this is what's interesting. You know, I'm multiracial. My dad was born in China and came to the US by way of Taiwan. And I think sometimes it's difficult when I have to have these conversations with my kids about the history. But like someone said, you can't be colorblind. You have to be color brave. You have to talk about these things. So where can we find DVRP? And what can we do to help advance the mission?
So, you know, you can find DVRP online. Our website is www.dvrp.org. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle is at APIDVRP. And in terms of advancing the mission, I think educating yourself and others by taking our trainings and workshops, resharing our posts on social media and amplifying our voices when we are posting, becoming a volunteer if they're interested. And they can email us at info@dvrp.org if they're interested in becoming a volunteer. Challenging misogyny and gender roles and expectations in our personal lives, that's one of the hardest things to do. You know, it's easy to say these things, but then, you know, when we're at home, all of us, even those of us who do this work, still have to respond to these expectations of us to behave a certain way or to respond to things a certain way. But to challenge these in a personal life, I think is a hard thing to do, but to do that is something that I would say. Learn how to be an effective bystander. Also, if somebody does share their experience, to believe them instead of being like, oh, but what were you doing? Why were you out late? What were you wearing? All of those questions that we're conditioned to think. Challenge yourself and think before you, hopefully you never see those things, but just say, I believe you and I'm sorry this happened. And if possible, and if you have the capacity to donate to us, any amount is welcome. And this funding will go towards providing supports to survivors of gender-based violence. So these are ways in which folks can support us.
No, thank you so much for that. That is amazing, actionable advice for viewers and listeners. Kritika, thank you so much. It's truly an honor to interview you for this podcast. And really, I'm so honored to serve on the board and advance the mission of DVRP. Back to you, Hope.
Well, thank you, beautiful ladies. Our other show, Incandescent Radio Show, is Voices for Change. And we would love to have you come on that show and speak to that to our other audiences. Rita, thank you so much for being on this board, for all of the amazing work you do to support women. At Incandescent Women, we really need to stand together. That is our mission. So thank you both for this beautiful work. And we will put all that information so women can follow you on social media and other things in the liner notes of all of these produced videos and podcasts. So thank you both. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you all next Friday on Margaritas with Margarita. Our next guest is Kate Holmes. And before we go, Rita, just tell us a tiny bit about Kate.
So what I absolutely love about Kate is helping us innovate advice. She is a certified financial planner. She's not a practicing CFP, but she helps each one of us innovate the way in which we are delivering advice to our clients. So I'm so excited.
That's excellent. Okay, ladies, thank you to both of you. Thank you to everyone watching us on Facebook Live. And we will talk to you all next Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern. Be well.